This is Asia Weekly from the Voice of America, the podcast that goes beyond the headlines and places events into context. A month has passed since an international court handed down a verdict against Beijing's claims in the South China Sea. China continues to assert control in the region, building aircraft hangars and deploying radar equipment, while its defense minister says it should prepare for a people's war at sea. Hey there, everyone. Steve Miller here. So great to have you with me today. Since the Permanent Court of Arbitration in The Hague ruled against China and its territorial claims to the majority of the South China Sea, Beijing hasn't altered its approach to the region. Chinese Defense Minister Chang Wanquan says the Chinese military, police, and people should prepare for mobilization to defend national sovereignty and territorial integrity. China's Air Force has also sent aircraft on combat patrols near contested islands in the South China Sea, and satellite images recently reviewed by the Center for Strategic and International Studies show new aircraft hangars capable of housing their fighter jets. With Manila, Japan, the United States, and other members of the international community urging China to honor the court's ruling, what exactly is Beijing trying to achieve with its latest actions?
I think what they're trying to achieve is basically just to show their anger with the recent ruling that was in the Court of Arbitration in The Hague.
That's Harry Kazianis, Senior Fellow for Defense Policy at the Center for the National Interest.
And I think we have to break this down in terms of two sets of reactions. The first set of reactions is basically from what's happened from July and basically what's going to happen until early September.
Because that's when China is going to host the G20 summit. Kazianis says Beijing will continue pushing ahead using its current tactics to gradually change the status quo.
But they're not going to do anything that's highly escalatory or risky until after September.
China has telegraphed some possible actions, like land reclamation work on the Scarborough Shoal or declaring a South China Sea air defense identification zone. And that is what Kazianis says he thinks is what
we have to worry about. I think we haven't seen Beijing's top card or what they're going to do next. We will see it after early September.
Greg Poling, director of the Asia Maritime Transparency Initiative at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, says it's been China's long-term strategy to exert de facto control over the area. Given the competing claims in the region by other ASEAN members and the recent ruling from The Hague, did the international community wait too long to push back on Beijing's claims by carrying out freedom of navigation exercises, which are also sometimes called FON ops?
You know, you can argue with certain tactical decisions. Did the U.S. wait too long to do FON ops, maybe? Should they have reacted more strongly to the Scarborough Shoal seizure in 2012, maybe? But I think the long-term strategy has been sound.
Polling identifies 2014 as the year that China changed the way it was putting forward its claims. He says it was widely known that Beijing was bullying and coercing its neighbors, like Vietnam and the Philippines. But
in 2014, all of a sudden, we had Chinese artificial islands cropping up in the middle of the ocean, where previously there had only been submerged reefs. And that changed the balance of power in a really fundamental way.
Because China can now deploy military or law enforcement in numbers never seen before that far south.
Which, if it's not stopped, is going to allow Beijing to just saturate this area. And if the goal is to establish effective control in peacetime, it's just hard to see how the Vietnamese and the Filipinos and the Malaysians can continue to operate in any real way in the Nine Dash Line without China's forbearance.
Kazianis says rising powers have always challenged the established status quo.
So what happens next is really a history problem above all else. And how the United States and its allies will react to that, what carrots and sticks they'll provide to Beijing to either be a responsible international partner or not, what things they're willing to put at risk in order to sort of put some barriers and some roadblocks in front of Beijing to do that, that's really the next key in this whole struggle for probably the next decade or so.
So what can be done to enforce the Hague ruling and prevent militarization of China's new outposts? Greg Poling again.
Ultimately, we have limited options. If China is absolutely committed to this strategy, no matter the diplomatic costs, then it's hard to see what the international community or those most involved, like the U.S. or Japan, can do. We can try to deter outright Chinese aggression. But ultimately, the long-term game is to try and name and shame Beijing, hoping that eventually China realizes this isn't the way great powers behave, and it's undermining its own long-term interests. And that's an unsatisfactory answer if you're looking for how do we resolve the South China Sea tomorrow or next month or next year. But if you recognize that ultimately this is a 5 or 10 year contest of wills, then it's the only tool you have.
And that is going to do it for this episode. But you know what? The conversation doesn't end here. How do you think the international community should respond to China as Beijing continues to refuse to acknowledge the Court of Arbitration's ruling? Please share your answer with me on Twitter or Facebook at SteveMillerVOA or on our community Facebook page, VOA Now. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends. And to get the podcast delivered to you automatically, subscribe in iTunes or your favorite podcast application. Thank you again for joining me this week, and until next time, be true to yourself, and always, be awesome.